This is the IBJ podcast for the week of October 25th, 2021. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. As we've discussed before, we're in the middle of a two-year period in which everything that happens is preceded by the word unprecedented. Today, we're going to talk about the Great Resignation, the current workforce trend in which Americans are quitting their jobs at an unprecedented rate. How many? About 4 million people per month in June, July, and August. Now, why? Well, there are a lot of reasons. There's a glut of open positions across the economy, which is causing employers to sweeten the pot for new signees in hopes of maybe stealing people from competitors. Some folks realized during the worst of the pandemic that life is too short to be in a crappy job, or at least one that's no longer a good fit. Some realized that spending time with their families was more important and rewarding than a demanding career and decided to try something less intensive. Some simply decided to retire early. But with all of this talk of employees handing in their notices, I'm sure most of us have at least considered it. I mean, I bet that you, in moments of frustration, have dreamed of shooting off an email announcing your departure. Now, as satisfying as that would be, we need to be wary of digging ourselves into a big financial hole. The smart defectors have plans for this situation to keep their heads comfortably above water. So for this week's edition of the IBJ podcast, I've asked IBJ personal finance columnist Pete Dunn, aka Pete the Planner, to help us figure out whether we have what it takes to say, take this job and shove it, either for a lower paying job or just to quit and search for a new one. We also chat for a few minutes about what likely will be a rough stretch for the stock market before the end of the year. This certainly won't make anyone feel any better about leaving their job. Here's our conversation. As always, I am pleased to welcome back to the podcast Pete Dunn, aka Pete the Planner. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, feeling spooky because it's spooky season.
Well, let's get right to the point. I'm sure you're familiar with this new phase of employment in America called the Great Resignation. I'd like to call it the quit storm. I'm pretty sure I coined that. I've done a few minutes of internet research. I don't know how to profit from it yet. But people are quitting their jobs at a significantly higher rate than they were before the pandemic. We are told that there are far more job openings than there are willing candidates. So it's a job seeker's market. We should also note that after nearly 20 months of the pandemic, there are people who are just completely burned out and need some kind of break from work immediately. There are people who've decided that their current job doesn't reflect their new values. Some have determined their childcare costs are so high that they're really better off staying at home. Some or all of this have led folks to quit before they have lined up a new job. Now, depending on the industry you're in, it can be difficult to look for a new job while you're doing the one that you want to leave. So for the folks who want to quit their current jobs without a new one lined up, at least one with similar compensation, the big question for today is, how do you know you can afford it? How do you know you can make it work?
I'd have to note, this is why I love the concept of financial flexibility. And when I think about my own financial life, what I'm going for is flexibility. I'm going for the intersection of time and money. So Mason, what you've just described, you know, when the quit hits the firm, what you've just described is when people say, you know what, my time is more valuable than the money I'm being paid. And during the times when I'm at work, how I'm made to feel is not worth the money. And so I love this because, again, intersection of two economic resources, time and money. And so there just has to be a set of rules that if you're currently evaluating this and you're listening to us right now and you don't know what's next, but you know you can't do this any longer, let's just set some ground rules today as to what you need to do to make sure that, sure, you might regret it, but it won't be financial regret. Is that fair?
That's it. That's exactly what we need.
All right, so where to begin is the place that everyone hates when I say this. But it's just the only place to begin. I mean, how can you not begin here? You have to have a budget. I mean, to quit a job without knowing your budget, dare I say, is incredibly irresponsible. Like, it is reckless. Now, I also have to say, I think, too, that part of this, I'm just going to go in and quit today, is the buzz of the recklessness. Right? It's like, I'm so disenchanted with this place. I'm going to do something reckless. However, don't do it without a budget.
Okay. How do I do a budget?
I'll just start with what's it cost for you to live? Let's stop calling it the B word and just say, what does it cost for you to survive 1 month in your life? Rent or mortgage? And even get into something like, well, what about a car payment? Or what about this or that? On some level, if this is important enough to you, you can start cutting obligations. You'd be like, well, I'm turning the car back in. Like, I'm getting rid of my car. I'll sell my car so I don't have the payment, and I'll take the bus, or I'll walk to work. I live downtown, whatever. Or I'll walk to my guest bedroom because there is no commute. That's what people have to be willing to do in order to get back the time that they no longer are willing to give for the money they were getting.
So I take a look at how much it costs for me to live. Take one unit a month. If we need to, we can stretch it over 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 months.
Well, yeah, you start with one, but I think part of that too, tip 1A, or that was 1A, this is tip 1B, understand your relationship with convenience. You know, convenience is where people blow through money. They exchange money to save time. They have tacos delivered. They have a cheeseburger delivered. They have their dry cleaning delivered. They have things brought to them. They have things overnighted. You know, the big movement is quick delivery. That's like the hotness right now. And in Manhattan and in various boroughs of New York, you read about all the biggest boom out there is quick delivery services, which is just convenience. And if your relationship with convenience is unhealthy, that means that you spend money to save time. Well, if you're quitting your job, you're going to have a lot of time. So you shouldn't be spending money to save time. So that's one of the first areas that most people would have to cut.
Now, I assume I want to take a look at my savings. I probably am ill-advised to quit my job if I don't have savings.
You would think so. Yeah, I agree with that. And part of this is the concept of runway, right? You say, well, how much runway do I have? It's not like I'm going to get a severance for quitting. So my savings account becomes my runway. And one of the dangerous elements of this is that you start to group in all of the money you have access to, including your retirement account or the 401k from the job you're leaving. And you may say something like, well, it's only, those are air quotes, only $7,000. So I might as well just cash it out, take the penalty. And then, so you start doing these weird justifications that make what could conceivably be a parallel move, be a regressive move, right? So you're saying, well, I'm leaving this unsatisfactory job to one that makes me feel better. And again, I'm exchanging money for time, so that makes sense. But the second you liquidate a retirement account, the second you take your future and use it to solve the present, then you've taken a massive step backwards. So if we're gonna have a do not break glass in this emergency, I think the 401k is the first place we'd start that conversation.
Okay. So it'd be great if I had cash.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Yeah, cash is helpful. But again, that's why the budget's so important, because let's say you're living normally, whatever that is, and let's say you spend $5,000 a month, but you only have $11,000 to your name. Could you conceivably cut your spending by $1,500 a month and then have closer to 3 months' expenses instead of two? It makes a pretty big difference when you're doing this. But to your earliest point, this is also where you could potentially fill in the pieces with gigs, like the gig economy. You could fill in an Uber. You could fill in DoorDash to deliver to other people who have bad relationships with convenience. All right, you could do that until you find that medium, right? Where you find, like, what's going to happen.
Now, as you've counseled in the past, it's great to have a emergency fund, 3 months you tell us what you think it is.
Yeah, 3 months. But as you're saying that, I'm thinking, and maybe I'm wrong. Sometimes I am. I can't imagine too many people with a full emergency fund just quitting their job. I feel like this is like I'm making a character judgment here. Like, I really, this feels aggressive. But I'm going to say, of the people I know who have had employment changes or people who just up and quit their job without anything else right there, it just doesn't seem like a profile where the person would have a full emergency fund. Oh, maybe I'm way ahead of myself on that, but I'm going to stick with it. I'm okay with it.
Okay.
It's a YOLO thing. If you're quitting your job, That is a byproduct of like this YOLO, like, hey, you only live once. I'm not putting up with this. If you have that YOLO in you, you likely don't have an emergency fund. That's offensive. And it's okay. I'm putting it out there.
Let's say that I'm a 54-year-old middle manager, and I've been doing my homework, and I do have this emergency fund set up. But man, my job is killing me. I just got to get out of here. I don't have time to look for another job. Would you, in any universe, say, yeah, go ahead and dip into your emergency fund?
Yeah. Okay. So let me just say, yes, I think if this is what you're going to do, that is why the emergency fund is there. This is a career emergency. I would also note, though, that's why I also don't believe your retirement fund to be part of an emergency fund. But this is the spirit of post-pandemic living. And I say this hoping that we're in the post era. YOLO's a thing. You know, I wrote about it in my column in IBJ 6 months ago, maybe 12. It all runs together. Who knows? It's sometime in the last 20 months. Like, YOLO is a thing where people are saying, you know what? I've gained a lot of perspective during this time. I used to care about work-life balance. Now I realize that it's more life-work balance. My life is more important than work. YOLO, I'm out. And that's a thing. That's a very real thing.
It also occurs to me that, you know, if I quit my job, I just use myself as an example. Now I don't have health insurance. I assume that's a huge expense. Yeah. This just sounds like something I need to investigate more.
So this is where we get back to that recklessness, that there are repercussions to parting with a benefits package. And health insurance is one of those things. I'm sure people don't quit their job specifically because of health insurance. YOLO's fun until you realize that you've got a prescription that you got to pay every single month and you don't have a copay in the marketplace, right? So health insurance is one of those things, and a little less of a sexy benefit. You get disability and life insurance go away. And I would also have to note, it's easier to tell someone to take that job and shove it when you don't have a family to support. You know, a single person can absolutely pull this off much easier than someone that has more than one mouth to feed.
The last time I quit a job, now that I think about it, I did have the extension of my current benefits that just ended up being a lot more expensive. Remind me what that's called.
Cobra.
I kept thinking tiger.
Wow.
My tiger benefits were like for 18 months, but they were so expensive. It was like $800 a month. So there is that. That still exists.
Yeah, you know, I've been reading a lot about the Great Resignation and about where workers are and where they are not. And it's worth exploring a little bit, like what's going on, right? So there's the idea that there have been a lot of early retirements during this period that people just say, well, I'm completely out of the rat race. I'm out, right? So that is an element of just quitting, right? So that's a thing. You also have the idea that people said, I no longer want to be part of a particular industry, especially with changing wages in other industries. I want to go that route. But what I've just described there is a proactive, somewhat strategic decision. I don't know. I mean, now that I'm talking about it here, Mason, I can't think pre-COVID, post-COVID, in COVID, just leaving a job with no other plan just generally just makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, that wasn't my next question. Was would you cancel this really under any circumstances?
Safety. I think we talked about it last time I was on. One of the silver linings of this period of time we're living in, one of them, is the increased discussion of mental health. I think it's amazing. It's going to be world changing that people who are struggling with mental health issues can talk about it and not be ostracized and not feel judged, that they can just like deal with their mental health. If your mental health is suffering because of work, quitting potentially is a solution. It could create other pragmatic issues that relate to money, and that can make you feel pretty bad from a mental health perspective. But yeah, Mason, there's reasons to quit a job. Health and safety and your mental health is part of that.
You said that you've known some people who have done this. Is that right?
I do. Yeah.
Did they go off the rails or was it successful?
I don't think the conclusion chapters have been written quite yet. I think what I have seen, and this is anecdotal, and anecdotes don't make empirical data. I've seen people quit and then enter the gig economy. I take this or that, I get a source here, three or four sources of income. They find themselves to some degree working to the bone, and they also find themselves just earning enough money that they need to earn to survive. And whether that's cathartic, I don't really know. Is it helpful? Does it press reset? Does it become this renaissance of your work life? I don't know, because their story is not over yet. But I do know that a gap in your resume of quitting a job with nothing to show for, right? Quitting a job with no other plan that could take a couple months to regain traction, that could be tough to explain. I mean, to go to your new potential boss and say, so when did you leave? I left a month and a half ago. Why? Couldn't do it anymore. I just quit. I mean, how do you tell that story in an elegant way is also maybe worth considering.
I know since I work for a business journal and we often write about people who have lost their jobs, or some people who have just decided they needed to check out for a while, what they typically do is they create a consultancy. I don't even know if they file the paperwork for it, but they say that they have become consultants. That seems to be a pretty simple, easily explainable way to explain away your 3 to 6 month absence from the workforce.
I'm going to go back to my lack of evidence and say that anyone who's just going to up and quit their job will also not have created a consultancy.
Yeah, I guess my point is you could just pretend.
You know, this is fascinating because I think you have to remove yourself from the monetary spectrum of success if this is a path you want to go. Because what you're saying is my mental state, my time is more valuable than the money. Let's go back to that. If you're going to make that assertion, then, you know, creature comforts, materialism, things that we all have hung on to at some point in our lives have to immediately become unimportant. You can't both value your time and then value all the creature comforts that the exchange of time bought you. And what you may find if someone just ups and quits, that they are able to completely press reset and break their dependency on income. Because that's what retirement is. It's the process of income independence. And you don't have to be 62 years old to find income independence. You're simply trying to unweave all of the obligations that have been woven into your life. And you can do that mid-career. I've seen people in their early 20s that start off the traditional path, 22, 24, 25, and then say, no, I don't want to do this anymore. And then they redefine what they're doing completely, and they no longer measure themselves on that financial scale. And that's actually healthy. But unless that renaissance takes place, then it does seem rather rash.
Okay, let's take a quick break to digest this information. This is the IBJ Podcast.
Hi, everyone. I'm Angela B. Freeman, host of IBJ's new podcast, The Freedom Forum, that discusses the intersection between business, race, and gender. Our third episode this month is with Jessica Gendron, president and CEO of the Center for Leadership Excellence, and she'll be talking about the disparities and inequities experienced between non-diverse and diverse women in corporate leadership positions. This podcast will debut on October 27th, 2021, and is brought to you by Cummins Inc. Hope to see you there.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast. We're chatting with Pete the Planner about the Great Resignation and what likely will be a tumultuous November and December in the stock market as Congress fights over raising the debt ceiling.
You know, one of the themes that often comes up when we talk is this concept of lifestyle and living up to the lifestyle you've established or ratcheting that lifestyle back down to save money. I'm assuming in this situation that we would say, I mean, you got to be prepared to ratchet that lifestyle down. You can't go into it thinking you're going to be able to do the same stuff you'd always been able to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not, right? And that's also why someone with no student loan debt can pull this off. That's also why someone who is arguably renting can pull this off. And that's what's funny about all of these tried and true financial stability mechanisms of home ownership and owning your car and being married. It's like, you know what? On some level, the less you have tying you down gives you more flexibility. a single person with no student loan debt that is renting, that can get rid of their used car, has a lot more financial flexibility than a married person living in the burbs with a mortgage and a car lease or two. Like, it's just a completely different level of flexibility. I would also note, and while this next area is not an area of expertise for me, it is an area of interest for me. It is completely possible to reinvent yourself in your own job without the drastic nature of quitting the job. Now, you do need a manager who is willing to let you grow. Around here in our workplace, you know, something we talked about during COVID is we give everyone permission to be whoever they need to be going forward. If you had a reputation, good or bad, for doing this or that, hey, you have permission to evolve from that. And if you have a supportive workplace that allows you to do that, you don't have to quit your job. You can just sort of reinvent your relationship with your job. And I've seen a lot of people do that.
Gotcha. Okay. What else is on your mind?
I think December, these next 6 to 7 weeks are going to be fascinating in our economy. In the next week or so, we've got a lot of earnings coming out on Wall Street, but we're still going to be heading to that, second week of December when the debt ceiling discussion happens yet again. And so my column in Indianapolis Business Journal this week was about a reader emailed and asked, well, hey, I know the market's going to crash leading up to the debt ceiling debacle, which is going to take place again because it was punted in October. So why not just get out of the market when I know the market's going to go down and just avoid the whole chaos that happens every single time Congress can't get their stuff together around the debt ceiling? And so, of course, I noted that it's one thing to know when to get out of the market, which sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong. It's a whole other thing to know when to get back into the market, and where is almost everyone is wrong. And so that was the advice. But it will be predictably chaotic in the next 7 weeks in our economy and on our stock market.
Yeah, I think that I have actually been paying attention to some of these discussions that we have. And yeah, the problem, as you say, is knowing when to get back in, because that is a really hard thing to time.
Let's say you are terrified that the debt ceiling debacle is going to strip your portfolio away. So you get out, say you do it. Then they come up with a deal that they always come up with. And then all of the value of the market returns the next day and you're not back in. Or it takes off beyond that and then you've missed those gains. It makes no sense. And it never makes any sense. The difference is this time along, we all know it's going to happen. It's like turbulence on an airplane. Do you feel better when you know it's going to happen? Or if it just happens, you're like, well, I can't get out anyway. Like, what am I going to do? What does the knowledge of knowing it's going to be bumpy really do for you? And with the market, it makes you feel like you should act, but I don't think you should.
Now, they can just punt again, can't they? Isn't that always the option?
I don't think they can punt in December. Now, I am not a constitutional law expert, although I do have a Twitter account. but I don't believe they can punt again in December.
Oh, boy. Okay, so this is going to be a showdown.
Yeah, this is the real one, right? They punted in October, so it's going to happen. You know, and the whole thing about this, and it is, I will not say it's a perfect storm because that's the most overused idiom ever, but here's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with supply chain issues. We're dealing with still increased consumer demand. We're dealing with Black Friday. We're dealing with, a dwindling infection rate with COVID. You're dealing with a budget that hasn't gotten passed in Washington. So you've got all of these elements shaping around this debt ceiling thing in early December. I'm telling you, and don't act on this, anybody, but it's going to get ugly.
Now, for a buy and hold guy like me, I should just tune it out, right?
Yeah. You can just guess and be right. It's like watching Tony Romo be a play-by-play announcer in an NFL game. He's going to tell you where the ball's going to go. It doesn't impact you watching the game or what to do about it, but this is what's going to happen. Hang out and watch.
What I always take from these situations is just wait.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing about your finances, yours, Mason, and everybody's. You want to do something smart. And you want to be directly responsible for something, good. But being boring is the better way to go. And you're good at that, right?
Oh, my God. It's like you're my wife.
I know. Ugh. I love that you were talking about YOLO. And I don't think you have a single ounce of YOLO in you. But you know what? Neither do I, if we're being honest. I am not a spontaneous person.
Well, that is a whole other conversation. I kind of had my big yellow jump where I quit my job and I went back to grad school and in a profession that pays like zero money, even if you're fantastic at it.
But you know what? So you've just described a situation that we've just talked about that's worked out for you, objectively has worked out for you. So for those people considering this that now are discouraged, it does work out because your situation's worked out.
Yeah, but I just ended up requiring so many antidepressants. The expense was great.
Issue. Yeah, yeah. Don't know anything about that. Look, if you haven't redefined success and redefined the quality of life that you live on a regular basis in the midst of a once in a hopefully century global pandemic, then when are you going to do that? Like, if you haven't reexamined everything, what's wrong with you? So I think this is a healthy discussion. And if you end up quitting your job with no other plan, okay. But now the pressure's on to make the best of this dynamic situation. I'll just note, I think a lot of people do this and have instant regret and then spend a lot of time to trying to justify and validate the decision they made that they know was regretful, for what it's worth.
All right, well, let's leave it at that.
All right.
All right, well, have a good one.
Yeah, bye.
My thanks again to Pete Dunn. Now, just a reminder, his column on personal finance appears regularly in the print edition of IBJ, and you can find several years worth of his work at IBJ.com. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few strong stories I want to point out in the latest print edition. First up, Indianapolis officials are gearing up to host the largest event the city has seen in months, the College Football Playoff National Championship. IBJ's Mickey Shuey dives into the preparations, the schedule for the community events, and what will make Indy's latest hosting gig unique. Also in this week's paper, Leslie Bonilla Muniz examines the recent increase in housing options for intellectually and physically disabled residents, which advocates say still isn't enough to meet the demand. Susan Orr explains why accounting firms now are having trouble recruiting talent for what traditionally have been stable, good-paying, white-collar jobs. And Sam Stahl profiles Indianapolis entrepreneur, philanthropist, and social activist Bill Osterly, this year's honoree for IBJ's Michael A. Carroll Award. Again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. And I will say, it is quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business, community, and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.